What you are listening to is real. The participants are not actors. They are real people with a case pending in podcast court. Hello, I'm producer Peter, and welcome to Cage Match, colon, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage, colon, podcast court. This is a case of a long-haired ex-con and a known terrorist who loves peaches a bit too much.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Peter?
What?
Just naked. Always. Dangling.
Listen, man, the dangle down's got a dangle.
Slanging and danging.
Slanging and danging. Oh, man. So it's just been a long time since we've actually sat at the table and done this. It's so you get to come for our first fuck off episode.
Yeah, great. It's been like a month since Nick and I have actually had to talk to each other.
Oh, you still choose
it's been
to.
Optional.
Yeah. Well,
otherwise.
Like fools still choosing to talk to one another.
And Peter's like old now.
I know.
You also.
Fucking 40.
Yeah.
Yep.
Me too.
And vasectomized.
Not me.
Yep. Yep.
I still got all my parts.
Yeah. Nick just got his snipped recently.
Yeah, it was real nice.
Nice
yeah.
job.
You got
nice
a
job,
knife, you got a souvenir knife right here as well.
You got it right here in case I need to cut somebody.
From Dr. Snip.
Yeah.
Can you hand me that box cutter over there, Peter?
Yes.
I don't.
Just to be safe.
Just to be safe.
I'll just use the scissor bit. I figure this is probably more than enough.
Yeah.
We've definitely escalated here. Well, welcome back, Shay.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm Sean. This is Cage Match, colon, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage. We're taking a different approach at this time. How about you, Nick? Who are you?
I'm Nick.
Perfect.
And Peter, who are you?
I'm producer Peter. We're really crushing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got a fancy new intro that does most of the heavy lifting
That's
for us.
That's true, yeah.
I don't need to explain what we do here anymore.
No.
Actually, that intro doesn't explain at all what we do.
No.
So we took 64 Nicolas Cage films, and we are final four bracketing those down to Nicolas Cage's cagiest film. Wow, I am out of practice. And then we'll get there eventually. And this is the start of the Slicks team.
Yep.
Taking two movies, the action genre, and arguably the two big ones.
I'd say they're some of the most well-known of his in that action.
But we're only here to talk about one of them today.
Right now.
Right now.
Until later.
Until
when
later.
We talk about the other part.
Yeah. I got a question.
But Shay won't be here for that.
So Shay, this is your third guesting? Yep. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Welcome back.
Only second official episode though.
Yeah, but I mean, G-Force really counts as like a double because it was so good.
Actually, we did G-Force to test this very
concept.
Yeah. It was ridiculous. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. The nodes, man. The nodes.
It's got that boom, boom, pow.
I do think about nodes a lot more now because of that movie.
And Fergaliciousness.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. I put that on yesterday in the background on the TV just to annoy Nick.
I just didn't pay attention to it. It's that easy.
Amazing.
So, Shay, you're here to defend the honor of the lovely movie
Con Air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, give us an opening statement.
Well, I saw Con Air in the theater, I'm pretty sure. So that's my relationship to it, the beginning, you know. It is a movie. It is an action movie about Nicolas Cage plays this guy, Cameron Poe. He does something to defend his lady and winds up in prison. And through some happenstance, ends up on this airplane that turns out to be full of crazy ass criminals, just the worst kinds. So naturally he's there too. There's a lot of action that happens and some weird shit. And then it ends pretty nicely. There's like a nice little bow on the end of it, you know, kind of typical action flick, but in the best way.
No, that sums it up great. Because after the initial 20 minutes, there is no plot to speak of. It's just action till the end.
It's just them doing things to get to the thing we've known that they've wanted to do since,
the first, that's all you needed.
20 minutes. Yeah.
Like, okay. Don't try to put too much script or like concept into a movie about an airplane full of criminals.
Yeah.
That's going to
Yeah.
You don't want to, you can't go too far with it. People won't believe it.
That's right. It would jump the shark too fast.
That was definitely their mission here, was to make a believable action flick for sure.
Yeah. That's why I filed it under documentaries. Yeah,
Dave Chappelle doll is a very accurate representation of him.
Looks just like the one I've got at home.
While it's unfortunate he's in that movie, it's really great that he dies. It was kind of epic and hilarious. enjoyable all around.
So the scene where he doesn't die, but they find his body and they like drop it on the car. Just a complete tonal shift from like gritty action movie to like kind of screwball comedy for all of 2 minutes. Like, this movie I love so much. It just tonally, it is all over the shop.
Yes, I think I wrote down in my notes that it is an action drama thriller heist romance comedy, because they do kind of like, they hijack the plane. But they all have different roles in it. And they had the schematics to the plane beforehand. Yeah,
it's planned out.
Yeah, it feels very heisty. I don't know.
Yeah, they had prison to prison communication somehow.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah, it's been a problem we've never really addressed about this one, but it's not a problem. Yeah. It's fine. MC Gainey.
Yeah, cool. Always cool. That guy's great. Swamp Thing. He's probably my favorite of the convicts.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, have we talked about favorite convicts before?
Who cares?
Yes, we have.
It doesn't matter. Which one's your favorite convict aside from Garland Green?
Well, okay, I guess I won't say that.
No, you can totally say Garland Green.
Steve Buscemi is just great in everything, in my opinion, so I really enjoy him. But
yeah,
he is. I agree. He's great in everything.
Yeah.
He's great in this.
He's creepy as fuck. But that's always what he is, so yeah. You kind of
He's a human pug.
And he's really good at it, yeah. I guess...
You're trying to think of the murderer's row of convicts?
Yeah, I'm just going through the Rolodex of convicts in my head.
Well, you got Pinball, you got...
I mean, Danny Trejo is kind of...
Nobody should be choosing
He's not my favorite convict. I just enjoy the fact that...
Oh, yeah.
That is such a weird choice that we have, like, these cartoonishly, like... caricatured villains. We have Cyrus the Virus, we have Pinball, we have like just these over the top like Billy comic Bedlam. Book villains, Billy Bedlam, and then we have this guy who raped 23 to 500 women.
Yeah, it's random. I just think it's random that he's there, and Danny Trejo is always just kind of a weird addition to things a lot of times. But John Malkovich is kind of he's the head of the
Cyrus the Virus.
I like him too.
He's great.
As an actor, and so I really liked his character. He's just unhinged and really.
No. He's always fun.
Yes.
I think my favorite was Moskowitz, one of the guys who got shot.
Oh.
Who had no lines. Yeah.
I really like Diamond Dog.
Diamond Dog.
Yeah, Ving Rhames is great.
Ving Rhames is always great.
Yes, yeah. And then the guy, I don't remember his name, but he was in Forrest Gump, and he was the friend of Cameron Poe in this.
Baby-o,
thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's get to the Garland Green of it all. Defend Garland Green and his placement in this movie.
I don't think he really has any, like, if you removed him from the movie, it wouldn't really change anything. In that regard, yeah, he's totally useless. Do I enjoy the fact that he's there anyway? 100%. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's part of the appeal, is just like, what is like most of the time watching it, just being like, oh, this is happening now. Oh, okay. What's he going to do? And then he's just there to provide some like creepo fucking commentary, weird statements, and then go sit and have tea with a tiny child in an empty swimming pool that comes out of like no clue, but I'm here for it.
I always think with Garland Green, I always think of that one episode of The Simpsons where the mafia and the Yakuza are fighting on the front lawn, and Marge is like, Homer comes inside and says, no, but that little guy in the back hasn't done anything yet. And you know, when he does, it's going to be great.
Yes.
And then there's not really that payoff other than he escapes at the end, and we're supposed to feel good about that.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been like a setup for Con Air 2.
I am annoyed we didn't get the buddy cop comedy of Cusack and Meany after this.
That's true. They're buddies now. Mm-hmm.
At least friendly.
Yeah.
Trauma will do that sometimes.
I love Cole Meany.
He's such a big meatball. I like him.
Yeah.
It's also just kind of a random person to have this. I only think of him in Titanic other than this. That's the first movie I think.
What was Colmini, or who was Colmini in Titanic? I don't think it was a what.
Oh wait, no, never mind. No, that was Billy Zane, British guy. No, it's a different British. It's a different person.
Billy Zane in a
no
fucking terrible wig.
I would love to see a chubby, balding Billy Zane. Well, I guess like
you mean Billy Zane now.
Just no, put some hair on him, and then it's okay. Not a lot of hair though.
Oh right.
You have to go halfway between hair and bald.
Okay, so it kicks off with Cage getting into a bar fight with some fucking yokels.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, they come at him.
Oh,
they
hold smash on. Him.
They want the lady.
It kicks off with, how do I live?
Some Leanne rhymes.
Without you.
Yeah, sorry. But, like,
he
forgive
gets,
me.
He gets, out, he gets out of the Army Rangers, gets off a boat to a bar right next to an oil refinery that produces fire.
Uh-huh. Alabama, yeah.
Meets up with his pregnant wife. She's 7 months pregnant, 6 months pregnant, 3 months.
Six.
Tries to have a nice dance with her. Some yokels are like, I want to fuck your wife. Go buy me a fucking beer.
I mean, it's a powerful tactic.
Yeah. Blames him for why they lost Vietnam.
Yeah, this is a strong stance for people to just have in the South. It's not what I would typically expect to find. And the fact that nobody else in the bar stands up to that guy or stands up for his behavior makes me think that this whole bar is just that way.
Probably. But then as they're leaving 10, like 20 yards from the bar, these three rock up, smash a bottle over his head, start really laying into him. Like they're aiming to kill him. He defends himself, kills one of the guys, just reflex, like nose bone into the brain.
Well, yeah, he pulled a knife out. Cage had permission to kill.
Yeah.
But because he's, a deadly weapon, 7 years for self-defense.
This movie's so stupid.
It's involvery manslaughter now. It's not so self-defense.
Okay, but here's the thing I love. Perfect. That happens 7 years because he's held to a higher standard. End of the film, destroys Las Vegas, kills a guy with like a big steam like weight. Just actual violence for the sake of violence. Bye.
Pat on the back.
Have fun.
National hero.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Here's a medal of honor.
Technically, they can't prove that he was responsible for most of that.
Fair.
Yeah. And it wraps again with Leanne Rimes. Yep. A nice little bookend.
How do I live without...
That drops a few times in the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it works perfectly every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Monica Potter.
So cute.
Great.
Yeah.
She's cute.
I really like her. Mm-hmm. Her nose is like such a classic turned up.
Like the whole cast. The whole cast just is enough, pretty great.
It is. It's a great cast.
Mm-hmm. John Cusack.
Cusack works great in this. I love his smarmy sandal wearing, like, it's, it'd actually be Mr. Thesaurus, more like Mr. Thesaurus.
I like his big suit.
Khaki suit wearing mofo.
Yeah, the fashion in this is not the best.
Well,
it was 97.
It was the 90s.
Although it was probably Nick Cage's best look.
I mean, and most gif-able, possibly.
The hair.
When he just walks off the bus and the hair, the wind in the hair, and he's got the smirk on his face. I mean, it's just everywhere. It's like the best thing.
So we have the little, like, him having 7 years in jail, and he's, like, learning Spanish, learning origami. I wanted all these things to come up during the movie.
Yeah, that would have been better MacGyver payoffs, I think.
If he had, like, origamied a shuriken at one point, and, like...
Fuck yeah, that would be
incredible.
That's
how he takes down Diamond Dog.
I also... He also does the cool thing where he's, like, sitting cross-legged and he's just holding himself up on his fingers.
Yeah.
Like, none of that stuff comes into play.
No. But it was cool to watch it happen.
It was.
I was trying to think of a time when he killed somebody just with his fingers, but...
I mean, he pushes Billy Bedlam into a thing.
Into a pipe.
Yeah. I think that was more like a kick, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. It was.
Oh, yeah. Like a hip thrust.
Heaved him off the back or off his back or
he
something.
He just bridges.
So.
That's exactly. Yeah, bridged it. He did. He bridged him up into the into the ceiling of the under the plane, the carriage.
The underplane. I do love that scene because they cut to Billy Bedlam and they're all like hunched over and he's just like.
I love how yellow they make his teeth just for that end scene.
Oh, it's so nasty.
It's like, we couldn't get the mannequin to look like it had white teeth, so he's got to have yellow teeth now.
Yeah.
There's
fuck this guy up.
That scene really is what a great example of what I think is just missing from this movie is just the dialogue and the writing is truly terrible, especially for an action film. You kick a guy onto a steam pipe. What do you one-liner? Nobody one-liners. Just like, why didn't you put the bunny back in the box? was the line read after that?
Yeah.
What do we think of Cage in general in this film? Like, Nick, you and I have watched a lot of Nicolas Cage. Where does this stack in terms of like character and performance?
I love the character because the character is just morally a good guy, but he's willing to get his hands dirty for this. He's trying to help everybody except for, you know, the bad guys. He does not help them at all. Just a good guy, but he's tough.
Yeah. I guess my issue with this in terms of a Cage film is like, I don't know how much it matters that it is Nicolas Cage with how little Cameron Poe really has to do in terms of speaking.
Right. There's not a lot of dialogue for
like, or like a character beyond just being random action tough guy.
Sometimes all you need is random action tough guy though. And he played it perfectly. I mean, you know, he didn't write the script. Right?
No.
He just delivered every line. He stayed true to the character.
This movie might have my least favorite Nick Cage line read of everything we've watched so far, which is when Baby O gets shot and talking about like, I don't believe in God. And Nick Cage just stands up and goes, I'm going to prove to you God exists. And like goes to like fight the bad guys.
Does he roundhouse kick someone at that point? I can't remember.
He gets shot in the arm.
Oh, and he just keeps going.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Action tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hot.
Mm-hmm. And he saves the day in the end.
He does.
Like four times. That's okay. My only beef with this movie again is that it's just like you could cut one of these sections out almost across the board. Like it doesn't matter which one you pick. And you would not miss it. Like you could take out crashing in Las Vegas and still end on the chase. You could take out the chase and end in crashing in Vegas.
The crashing in Vegas was
crashing in Vegas hilarious. Did have to happen.
It was awesome that when they show the plane going through the building and like somehow no one hears or sees what's going on until it's right there.
Oh,
like,
shit.
Crashing in. I love that. That's just like the special perfect action sequence. Yes. Yes.
The original version, though, I really wish they could have done. They were going to crash it into the Mirage, but the Mirage was having a problem with their identity and like didn't want to be attached to an R-rated movie, which like of all the movies, this one would be fine. And they were going to fight in the volcano that they had. It was going to erupt and end in an underwater fight between Poe and Cyrus the Virus.
What?
That's incredible. Pretty cool.
Like, that's tight as fuck.
So long as he can still be, like, launched off of a
how do you get him into
truck.
The Smasher?
Yeah.
That is, yeah.
He gets ejected from the volcano.
Yes.
Whoa! Yeah. I mean, there is some good, like, human projectile scenes. Like, John Cusack gets shot by a jet. Propulsion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cage jumps through a window and then is propelled by an explosion.
Yeah. Cyrus the Virus gets launched off of a fire truck.
Right. I mean, he's hoisted up on the ladder.
What do you think Gage
just crashes in there?
He's handcuffed to the ladder. What broke?
Probably his thumb.
Yeah, his hand probably ripped off
just
something.
Like dislocated.
Oh, well, Trejo's arm.
That definitely came off.
I forgot about that when I was rewatching. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a good bit.
Yeah, there's like good visual jokes.
Mm-hmm.
But wait, what a weird arm that it just completely tore off like an action
at the
figure.
Elbow. Yeah.
Well, he looked like one. So it kind of made sense to me.
Oh, like another scene that I think you could cut, like the trap in the airport, like that. You don't need that. I get why it's there. It's another big showpiece. There's lots of gunfire, you know, all that. But it's like it doesn't need to be there. They could have just escaped that base. Had Poe fuck up their plane. And
the trap at Carson City.
Yeah.
The first stop.
I don't know that you need the military moment. You know, there's just a lot of bits and pieces that could make this movie tighter in my mind.
It is popcorn. 2 hours. Yeah.
And popcorn's fun.
Yeah.
And tasty.
Yeah. You would still need the military involvement or whatever, but they could just come up as the plane escapes.
Yeah.
Because you had the whole note being thrown out and then the moment of where's
the chopper
backup
chase
and he's like they're coming and
there's so many things. There's the fucking chopper chase. It's like this just keeps going.
Well, it's the classic no one listens to the guy that ends up being right about everything.
Yeah, sure.
Every time he's not listened to. And they go and chase down that
to be fair
poor tour guy.
I don't trust most people in suits and sandals.
Well, especially khaki beige ones.
And Birkenstocks. No.
So, okay, this, Schaefer, this was your first time watching it as a grown person?
No, I'm sure I've watched it in the past years. So, you know, that's, I'm sure I have, but it was the first time in a while that I'd watched it when you asked me to do this. This morning when I rewatched it, that was just a rewatch to make sure everything was fresh, which clearly worked really well. As I didn't remember anyone.
This was a great, I mean, I would have seen most of this movie out of order, like on TBS or TNT. This is a great, no matter where you turn it on, you're going to see something fun.
That's true. I mean, it is an enjoyable movie in that regard.
Even the cliche, just hokey stuff in it, just fit because it was, the entire movie was that.
Yeah.
And this, I know this one got like bad ratings or whatever. People didn't really like it as much as some of his other ones anyway, that's for sure. But I don't know. I think you just have to take it for what it is. And like you said, not put too much meaning to something.
Yeah, it's just a cornball kind of action film.
Yes.
I love that it kind of exists in the role of something like the Untouchables or whatever that Stallone piece is, where it's like, we're just going to cram a bunch of like the hottest action and like film guys in this together. Yeah, Expendables.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's right. There's a bunch of celebrities we know you love. Yeah. Yeah.
I have an entire Expendables back tattoo. It's good. It's all Dolph Lundgren, though. 30 Dolph Lundgrens.
Oh. And then the most random gay character as well in here, who's again very stereotypical, but it was kind of cute to just see a person in drag in this film. And it wasn't kind of anything, you know, that character probably didn't matter, but the fact that it wasn't a bigger,
right, it wasn't a punchline,
you know what I mean? Yeah. It was just like, yep, he's just this gay prisoner and likes to wear dresses. I was like, that's pretty dope.
And that is a reference to an actual person, though.
Oh, so, it is. Yeah. Oh, okay. I had no idea.
I don't have that information again.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact story, but Sally Can't Dance was the name.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well.
Yeah. Did you have a quote that you thought was interesting or remarkable or funny or stupid?
Yeah did you do our work for us?
Yeah, I didn't write it down.
Okay.
So
just dome it.
Was it? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeehaw.
I fucking love that. That no, and maybe I'll see some interesting trees and stuff.
What is it? When
there were so many.
Talking to fucking Garland Green for the first time. I was like, what's wrong with him? I had to guess.
A lot. That is the one. Thank you.
That is a terrific line.
That's a good line. Yeah.
Right when you said, I was like, yes, it was that one. Because, yeah.
I like when he comes up from killing Billy Bedlam and Garland Green goes, and two men go down and one comes up.
Yeah.
I'm not talking to you.
I did notice because the way they figure out that he's the traitor is fucking what's
Cyrus the Virus, Billy Bedlam, Diamond Dog.
Diamond Dog goes down to like, it's like, I'm wondering about this guy. I'm going to go look at his personal effects, which is how Billy Bedlam found it out to him. Like, so just, we're using the same plot point.
I mean, that box is still there.
Yeah. No, but I mean, we've talked about this. I think every time we watch this movie, I'm like, you could cut 20 minutes out of this movie easy and it would still have the same plot.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
Probably. But I didn't fall asleep during it. Some other movies. I don't know if I'm allowed to.
Are you going
to
talk some
G-Force?
Shade? You can talk some shade.
Am I allowed to talk shade about the one that
you can.
It's up against?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I did fall asleep trying to watch Face Off. Not going to lie. I did. For me, what it came down to is while I enjoy explosions and action, it was so much of that over and over and over and over again that my brain kind of took it as white noise. And I guess I fell asleep.
As opposed to this movie, which is very controlled.
No, not controlled. I would just say there's less. It's varied. There's like explosion and then it cuts to a scene that's a little quieter or has like some random weird funny one-liners. I don't know. It was under the same conditions.
Face Off doesn't have anything like that.
And counterpoint, Face Off does have weird familial face touching.
That was the other
big win.
Yeah, that one. It's just everyone's doing the weird. Let me grace your face with my fingertips, and it's weird, culty. Like,
did I watch
Children of the Sun? Yeah, I don't know. It gives me bad vibes overall.
This is good shit to throw on Face Off.
Yeah.
And John Travolta is really just one of the worst humans. So I just don't want to. I didn't want to see his face. It was all around.
But it was
off.
Yeah. And then Nick Cage had to wear it, unfortunately, for Nick Cage. So I don't know. It
was weird that they actually did that for that movie.
I know. Dedicated artists, yeah. You know.
But I'm not judging on plot, believability, or anything like that. No. We're in the same vein here for sure. It's so clear why they're up against one another.
You watch these movies. So you watch Con Air as of this morning, and also not that long ago. How do you consider it in terms of rewatchability?
I'd probably rewatch it again. It's not like a once a month thing, but I would absolutely find myself watching this again for sure.
Yeah. You could watch it organically, just like one day.
Or just watch it in bits and pieces as it was meant to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Have it on in the background while I'm doing something else, which I like to do with a lot of movies. And then you catch just like one of the stupid lines, you know? But yeah, I overall, you know, I just liked it. And maybe, I don't know, Face Off for me, I didn't see that one in the theater. So maybe I don't have as like grounded, rooted connection to it like I do with Con Air. But again, it also just didn't grab me in the same way. The plot just wasn't for me as fun. Con Air, I guess I like more I like the more comedic aspect, I think, of Con Air, where sure, I think, sure, you can point out aspects of Face Off that are funny, but I feel
don't
like
think they're intended to be.
Yeah, and I think like, Con Air had more of that kind of slapstick, like, okay, we know what we're doing right
here. It's an action comedy.
We know we're showing you this Dave Chappelle dummy, and we know what you're thinking, and we like that, you know, like, like, that's fine. We're into it. We're going to dump him out of a plane. I don't know.
I mean, that's a fair point. That's kind of what we're doing with this entire exercise. We really want to get a take. Like, why is this movie worth watching? And I think that's a really good excuse for it. You know, it's stupid. It's fun. Yeah. You can turn your brain off and laugh and have a good time. And then a bunch of propane tanks blow up, you know, whatever. Sure.
Who doesn't need to just check out right now anyway, you know, a little bit, just every once in a while, just check the F out.
Yes.
It's nice sometimes.
Favorite scenes.
I like when he's under the truck with the old guy at the airport. He's trying to get like a syringe for baby ho. And he's like, please don't kill me. He's like, stay down here. You'll be fine. I just need a syringe. Oh boy, don't do drugs. They'll kill you.
Amazing.
Mine might be the whole like final fight sequence, the many deaths of Cyrus the Virus. I love that it just keeps going. I love that he just steals a cop motorcycle and rides after, stabs him through the foot, launches him through a window, electrocutes him, and then
smashes
his head. When he finally gets terminated.
When the propeller goes like through the airplane
for sure.
Between them.
Yeah.
That was nuts. Ooh. Also, when the guard opens up the thing that says do not open and it's a bomb, that explosion is great. And that like his body gets like ragdolled across
totally
the room.
Totally flung. Yeah, man. And John Cusack out in the hall with the door that comes over his head, you know, whatever. Some lands in the wall right next to him. Could have been me.
I want to know why John Cusack turns around in that scene, because he's running away to go get something or get somebody. Then he's like, the guy like opens the thing, but John Cusack's down the hall, and John Cusack has this sudden like, I have to turn around and do something right as the explosion happens.
Well, because he saw that box that said do not open, and he's like, I bet those motherfuckers, these just fucking idiots are going to open that shit. He's like, get out of there. I like the scene. Okay, I like any kind of escape scene, to be honest with you, even if it's the bad guys that you're not really rooting for. But the fact that they hid little tiny pins, little needles in their hand, like under fake skin or whatever, is so hilariously amazing. And they just boop, bop, boop, pick the lock.
Yeah, it's that easy.
It was that easy. I like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how, you know, at first I couldn't remember how they escape when I rewatched it the first time. And then I saw that and I was like, those tricky bastards.
Oh, yeah. Dave Chappelle sets a dude on fire and
he barfs up a fucking.
I don't have a particular favorite scene, but there's one that, like, a specific image from this that I always remember. It's as the breakout is starting to happen, but Cyrus hasn't gotten released from the cell yet, and he's just like standing at the gate going, "Hey!"
Yeah.
Shaking his manacles around.
I like that it sounds like a faux baby whine, like, "Eh."
Open the gate.
So annoying.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite part.
Yeah.
Love it.
Okay, so if you had to sum up for us a case saying why this one should move forward, what would you say?
I mean, I think I did, but
just say it.
Cut
better
that out
this
and
time.
Splice it in here. Yeah.
If you could just rearrange some of those words.
Small, memorable bites. Remember, we're like goldfish here.
Yeah.
Action-packed, quirky, thrill ride, stupid in the best way, satisfying resolve. And worth a rewatch. Cage looking fly, looking pretty hot, nice hair, good muscles.
Obligatory. I'm gonna take my shirt off soon. Just have the
right.
Have the tank top.
Tattoos and stuff. Yeah. Hero, you know, he's got the hero side of the story here. And there's no creepy face touching, so that's why.
All right. Strong argument. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Shay.
Thank you. I always enjoy being here. It's always a good time. It's been too long.
We have fun.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah. Welcome back.
At least there's no gerbils in this one.
Thank fucking God. No animals of any kind.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just a bunny.
Just those animals in the air.
But it doesn't
stuffed
talk.
Animal it's and perfect. The animals in the air. I mean, honestly, okay, favorite line is honestly when he turns around. And when he just, John Malkovich, he takes over the plane and he tells the pilot, he's like, "You're still going to Carson City." And then he comes out and he's like, "Welcome to Con Air." I love / hate when they say the names of the film in the film.
Both of these movies have that.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, and he, it was, you know, it was a good line for him. I thought it worked well in the moment.
Yeah,
definitely.
Okay.
Should I?
Yeah, give a bang. Woof.
Gavel.
We'll just keep that one.
We'll, yeah. And you have angered the rest of us. Amazing.
And we're back.
Also here with
our old friends.
Yeah, we're back again. That's Gary.
And Rox.
Our guests who are better at our jobs than us.
Yes.
It's nice to see you guys again.
Yeah, welcome back.
It's good to be here.
You're three timers as well, right? This is your third record?
Yeah. Fourth, technically. The lost episode.
Yeah, welcome back. So yeah, we had 2 3 timers. I didn't even realize that we did that.
Yeah. I mean,
you sluts.
get around.
Technicality on the last one.
Well, oh, because of G-Force?
Yeah.
You got to count G-Force. Never forget G-Force.
I mean, he was on the podcast. So
that's fair.
Yeah.
Are y'all noticing what you're doing to Roxanne? Each time she's getting filthier on the mic and she just led with you sluts.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good.
No, that's fine. Yeah,
I mean, it just felt so at home for us. So. Yeah.
I mean,
it's just speaking truth to power.
I am. You know.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with Face Off.
So Face Off. Yeah, do you guys want to give us a brief rundown of this film?
By way of getting into this, I want to talk about 1997. What was actually happening in 97? The zeitgeist must have been thick. You had this film and Titanic and LA Confidential. And then on television, you had the debut of Rugrats and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I think Biggie got shot in 97. Just so many really interesting, groundbreaking, pivotal things happened in 97. And
including the making of Con Air.
Right. That doesn't make the cut.
Con Air came out in 97.
That was the shade.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but not just making it. Both these movies came out the same year.
Absolutely. And that omission was intentional. But anyhow, to contrast this film with LA Confidential, which really got so much critical acclaim, I did a quick little search to see which movie won more awards. And as y'all probably remember, LA Confidential, like, cleaned house, like 28 awards, 30 awards, something like that.
Definitely remember this.
I was 13 watching the Oscars with bated breath.
Right. And it was like all the highbrow awards. But Face Off, if you recall, won a Blockbuster Movie Award and MTV Movie Sick. Award, maybe? Yeah. So the People's Awards.
Yeah.
People's Awards, right?
Absolutely.
It got a Nickelodeon's Kids' Choice Award.
100%. And so my basic synopsis, and I'll throw it over to Rox to like add some more context, is I think that this movie settled into the niche at the time of telling the old, like, mythic, like, Greek and Roman stories. And so much of this plot hinged on calling back some really, really old storytelling tropes. And obviously they weren't trying to hide it by naming the main characters Castor and Pollux Troy. And there's an Adam and Eve in the film. And there's just so many things that they were, I think John Woo and all the people he worked with were really trying to go like super old school myth with this film. And for me, I thought there was, so much
like
good.
Like the boat chase from Oedipus.
I knew you were going to point that out. I said to Roxanne coming in, I was like, Nick loves Oedipus so much. And like, maybe a little too much.
Yeah,
and
I'm very comfortable with my Oedipal things, my Oedipus complex.
Yeah.
Pornhub.
Nick really loves when the bows of two ships crash into each other.
It's called docking.
So take it away, Rox.
What I will say about the plot of this movie is that it made a lot more sense to me after I thought about it while on ketamine.
Okay.
This is exactly.
Yeah. We're glad you guys are back.
Go on.
I mean, I just thought about face transplants and it just made total sense. I don't know if I can explain it. But I will. Okay. Let me put it this way. If you're not on drugs, this movie is insane. And just feels like a little bit of everything. It's an everything and the kitchen sink kind of movie. And for me, I'm going to already just start pulling for this film. I think it gets better with every watch. Like the first time around watching this, it felt completely frantic and wild. Second time around, it still felt that way, but it all started to come together. Yeah, I think that's the beauty of the movie. It's about these two guys, good guy, bad guy. They swap faces.
As you do.
And bodies. Somehow. And so they're pretending to be each other and chaos ensues, good versus evil.
And as they swap faces and bodies, they also swap families and they swap each other's delinquent fatherhoods and they swap each other's sexual relations. And it goes like Oedipus, you know, mm-hmm. And it gets to these real like messy entanglements that I think are so characteristic of myth.
Well, since we've jumped right into it, where do you guys fall on the Archer's wife is just completely checked out side of the coin versus they had their penises swapped? I know where I sit.
Yeah. I still think they just sort of make it into like the Reeboks like Airs. Like where you just squeeze the nutsack and it inflates the penis to...
Yeah, plus or minus what you need for comfort.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a good callback because weren't the Reebok pumps probably 97?
They probably were very popular around that time.
That tech was available.
Branding.
They're still popular to me now, so...
When did Men in Tights come out? Like 95? Because they were in that.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Also featuring Dave Chappelle.
It's true. Yeah, we're back to Chappelle.
Yeah.
We'll pick that apart. Would you guys like
93?
Okay, there you go.
Is it malarkey or is it a thing that there are these constellations and moments in like pop culture and Hollywood, particularly as one vessel for pop culture to get out to the people, where there's just like it's all this content that really lasts and permeates for a long time and then more fallow periods? Am I just making that shit up because I've read too much astrology, or is that a thing that happens?
I mean, it is kind of remarkable that there are so many notable things that happened in that particular year, but I wonder too, we're all of a rough age, and I think that there's stuff that crystallized for our generation that happens mm-hmm. to stand out more. Like, would my 11-year-old son look at any of these movies and be like, that speaks to me? Right. Probably not.
I think there's also something to be said about pre-internet era where content was actually like produced and made and a very different way than it is now, because your son and daughters are going to grow up with like very bite-sized bits of media made by idiots on the internet.
Right. And versus they're gonna have a 2.5 hour movie or 2 hours and 20 minutes.
View of what entertainment is and what like they're going to remember fondly and be nostalgic for.
Plus, they're very used to penis swap technology.
Oh, at this point, true. Yeah.
On that note, and I will just say as a caveat, mom and dad, if you're listening, I made the mistake of telling my parents about this podcast, guys. So mom and dad, if you're listening, don't listen to this next part. I don't want to hear my parents have my parents hear me talking about.
In the spirit of Face Off, would you use reverse psychology? Please please listen to this next part about Sam's parents. Make sure you're going to really want to listen.
We've already talked about the ketamine, but mom and dad, hang up before I start talking about dick.
They know about the drugs, but sex is another story. I'm theorizing about Eve here. You know, you could take it in the direction of it being a subtle feminist message, because if you're that concerned about your penis being one of a kind, then, you know, maybe you should not be so concerned about it, because at the end of the day, they're more or less all interchangeable.
But what if, what if Archer did not know, was not fully aware of Castor Troy's bifurcated penis going into this, and it blows his cover? You can't unfork a wiener, except maybe with magnets.
Oh, yeah. Good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably what happened. Okay, I take it back. Yeah.
I will say, so we know Castor Troy can eat a peach for hours, and there's some, that's definitely something.
Like, yeah, innuendo. In that bedroom too.
So I'm just like, Archer gets back in his own body. Wife suddenly now has a proclivity for having her ass eaten out. How does that work for their marriage?
Well,
he'd have to do it after bringing home like a strange boy that's going to grow up to look like the murderer of their child. That's still the weirdest part of this movie for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I also think the face touching thing is really
fucking
weird.
That's really the worst.
Actually, it's technically called a face waterfall. We learned.
Do tell.
Hate that.
Continue. I also hate that.
That's right out of the mouth of John Woo. They called it a face waterfall.
And audiences loved it.
How does that test well?
I mean, we're audiences and we did not love it.
Yeah. Have you ever tried it?
Yes.
Nick, come here.
Everybody, yeah, face waterfall, the person you're right. I didn't like it. I didn't like
you're clammy.
It.
I know.
To take that,
I can't look at any of you anymore.
To take that point about Archer having sex as Troy and Troy having sex as Archer, one of the things Rox and I were talking about before coming in here was it was clear that Castor Troy was making Sean Archer's life better. It seemed to me in the film that his wife and his kid loved having Castor Troy around way more than Sean Archer, mm-hmm. and his coworkers.
Liked it, right?
He was a better coworker. So Castor Troy elevates Sean Archer's experience. Similarly, Rox and I contend that John Travolta acting like Castor Troy, but acting like Nicolas Cage would act like Castor Troy, is the best acting of his career. When John Travolta acts like Nicolas Cage, it's the best shit he's ever come up with.
I think both of these performances are really good. Watching like when Sean Archer first gets Castor Troy's face, we first see Nick Cage as Sean Archer. That made sense. And he kind of like goes through the emotions of like kind of coming out of the drugs, like seeing his face, like kind of like starts just cackling because his brain snaps a little, then he starts to cry. And just, that's a great scene and a powerful scene for what is not really that emotional a film.
And then he still has the voice, the John Travolta voice, yeah. And it's just silly sounding.
But like the physical acting I loved in that scene.
Yeah, absolutely. And I loved the way that Travolta, whenever he wanted to accentuate an evil line, would tilt his head a little bit, like in such a Cage way, you know, like he took on all of these Cage-isms, particularly the lines, the next 100 years.
Yeah.
And then also, let's see what's in Papa's bag. Peaches. And then he licks his daughter's face. But again, with the bravado that Nicolas Cage would deliver that line.
Yeah.
This movie is fucking wild.
Truly.
I fucking love this film so much. This one has grown on me so much since we started this.
making Travolta make fun of his own chin is terrific. I like it. There's a lot to be said about this, and we haven't even gotten to the boat chase.
Right. Oh, we did.
All right, before we get to the boat chase, the boat chase is awesome. Yeah, right. I will say the one place where this movie really falls down for me is still the prison sequence, just because it just, okay, face swapping technology, fine. That's what we're here for. We know that going in. We can all agree it's dumb, but that's the crux of this film. We get to Ardoin prison and it's like magnetic boots and all this like crazy other sci-fi shit. That's like that you went one step too far. Just have like a Blackgate prison, like off the coast. Fine. But like you have to have all this extra just stuff that doesn't do anything to the movie and just makes it silly.
Yeah. In a way, I completely agree with you. And I think that the fact that this film was made in 97 and it was about a war on terror, it was a little ahead of its time, and it made some of these like good versus evil, law and order versus terrorist dynamics look a little weird, because I think that like we all learned what a black ops prison in Guantanamo Bay would look like several years later. And, you know, they were already out there, but in terms of like the pop culture awareness of what was going on in these spaces, there was probably no visual for it because it hadn't been shown on cable TV or in newspapers. And so, yeah, they come up with this weird like sci-fi. It's a little overdone. And yeah, in general, I thought that that was such an interesting piece of the story, was the fact that this was made before this massive shift in the way that policing was done in terms of terrorism. And it was a war on terror film before the war on terror.
Well, like the visuals of it, like really feel like a bygone era of like 80s sci-fi, like that kind of thing.
Just to comment on the prison stuff too. The original screenplay, it was written as a prison movie. Like the whole thing was sci-fi prison. And John Woo was the one who, when he signed on to direct it, he really saw it as a character driven film. And so that was the spin that he put on it. And they kind of rewrote the script based around that. That's my understanding.
Correct call.
So 100%, weirdly, the thing that the film like originated as, I agree. It's sort of like stands out in this weird way from the rest of the movie and is sort of not the most interesting part of the film.
Mm-hmm. However, there is one nugget for me personally. I really loved when Nicolas Cage as Sean Archer needs to get himself in the chair for the lobotomy or the electroshock therapy so he can get his boots off. So he punches the guard to get the cigarette, or he asks for the cigarette. He punches the guard, and then eventually he gets lifted up and he's shouting, "Does anyone have a light? Yeah. You got a light?" Which I thought was just so well delivered.
I do love when he first gets to the prison and you get the one guy like picks a fight with him, and he's trying to talk to Pollux and talking about how his like brain's messed up and trying to convince Pollux that he's Castor Troy. It's like, I don't even remember why that guy, you know, big guy came at me. I just love the line from Pollux, like, "You made a sex sandwich with his ex-wife and with his wife and sister the night he was arrested." I'm like,
oh yeah, Dubov, that was the machine.
Yeah. Oh shit. I didn't even notice that. Yeah. But I'm trying to, I'm not going to go into descriptions there.
Yep.
Are we going to talk about Dubov's penis? Is that what
for you? No, just the sex sandwich.
No. Rox explained it. They're all the same.
Thank you, Peter.
Unless they're bifurcated.
Unless they're bifurcated.
Unless you have magnets.
Magnets. Right.
Precisely.
This is going to be one of those ones I listen to in like 3 months and be like, what the fuck are we talking about?
How did we get here?
Shout out also to the prison break scene. That was great when he's like on the roof, like getting out of prison. That part was pretty great, I thought.
So, okay. I was watching this with my brother and they got to that part and he jumps off and ends up in the water and there are like helicopters circling around and they're just like, he's probably dead.
Yeah, sure.
Let's not worry about it. People can't swim, right?
No.
You know, there's a few moments in this movie where somebody is just sort of assumed to be dead and we don't actually know why that is, including the final scene. I don't know if you guys knew this, but they're making a sequel.
Face offer.
Faces off.
What would it even be? What would make the faces come off again?
And that's what gets you through the door. Yeah, right?
I'm gonna watch that movie.
And you know, I think what your point about the huge plot hole that he survives that leap into the frozen waters in the middle of nowhere off what
you could see LA in the background. It was like a few miles off the coast.
Okay. I didn't realize
from
I missed
all of those LA offshore oil rigs.
Yeah.
That it was pretending to be.
Yeah. Right. Used to those.
Like, you can definitely see the shore in one shot.
Yeah, he's not terribly far.
That's what really pissed me off. It's like, you could probably just pick that guy up, like, there.
Yeah.
But regardless, there's a plot hole there about how, yeah, he evades all these helicopters in the middle of the water.
So they do give up unnaturally quick.
Yeah.
For a supermax prison. Yeah.
Totally. And I think that part of the, like, plot hole, part of the construction of that was this dipping a little more into the realm of, like, doing a science fiction film and asking the audience to continually suspend belief and getting a little farther away from doing, like, a myth tell. In the myth, or like in the fairy tale, you never have to ask the audience to suspend their disbelief because it's just assumed from the get-go. Like, we can saw faces off with lasers.
Yeah,
you know, right. We don't have to explain anything.
A wolf can wear clothing and be mistaken for a grandma.
Yeah,
sure.
So it kind of hangs out in this middle space between myth and science fiction and sometimes gets a little clunky. But I really like it when things get all the way pushed out into the realm of total absurdity, into the mythic. Particularly, I love the scene where Sean Archer's daughter stabs him with the knife that he provides her. I think that that's such classic mythic imagery to have that kind of irony built into the plot. And that's right after he says the line, "What's in Papa's bag?" I thought that moment was just one of my favorite.
How do you feel about the mythology of the mother of Adam making out with her brother as he was dying?
Yeah, again with the, like, Oedipus stuff, right? Yeah. Like, I don't
little
think
brother
I
sister kissing is super nice.
They, I guess, in an interview they were like, why did you do that? And they were like, we just thought it would be weird.
Yeah, figured they were a weird,
it was,
weird family.
Yeah. It was weird.
Yeah. Well, Nick, you clearly sussed this out. You saw the boats and you recognized that this was the way into the stream of Oedipus story. Like, what? Tell me more about that. How did you immediately become aware that this was so prominent in the film?
You know, I just used my old divining rod and pants got a little tight. And I was like, this is definitely a mother-daughter, mother-son kind of adult documentary.
God. Edit your way out of this, Peter.
No.
And you know what? I found water.
Bingo. Well,
how many times so far? You're keeping count now, right?
Yeah, I've got like an abacus set up in the entryway of my house, which is where I often complete. So
Josie just hears that tick of the abacus sliding over. God damn it.
Well, to get back to what you were saying, Rob, about just the, like, the plot holes of this movie, I just want to make a case for Face Off, both as a film that I think really does stand alone, but also I think why it should continue in this competition is that it epitomizes this thing that I know when we've been on and you guys all have been talking about throughout this show, which is this thing about Nicolas Cage and just like things being pushed to the absolute brink where you have a choice, you know, are you going to jump into the plot hole or not, you know? And the thing with Nick Cage is like, if you say yes to just going there, like, you're going to have a good time.
Right.
And that for me is the beauty about Face Off, is like, it really, it makes it so clear. Like, that's exactly where you are right from the get-go. I would say like that initial scene with Nick Cage where he's the priest and he's, you know, dancing, it's just so clear. It's like, you're either going to get on board with how insane this stuff is or you're not, and you're not going to have a very good time watching this movie. So you might as well get into it.
No, that's fair. And he does steal the show. Like, he like chews the scenery so good. And
yeah, he's good both as Caster Troy and Sean Archer. So
also another case where they say the name of the movie and the film a couple times. Do you want to take his face off?
I love that scene where they're all fucked up.
Oh, how many times are you going to say face off? Fuck.
But if you're really,
it's a long
up, it's
movie.
Like,
face off.
Yeah. So that's my biggest beef with both of these movies. I think that they're both a little too long. I think you can chop bits and pieces of either one and still have a great movie.
How did Sean Archer as Caster Troy come to the conclusion that Caster Troy would use phrases like, excuse me, I have to go to the little boy's wee wee room? That's been, like, a weird vocabulary choice. Like, if I was impersonating a terrorist, I'm not sure terrorist for hire. I'm not sure I would come to the, oh, he probably uses child references when he talks about it.
Already
downstairs.
On drugs at this point.
Yeah.
They're all really fucked up at that point.
Yeah, that's true.
That is a really dumb thing to say, though.
It is a dumb thing to say.
It's not as dumb as the face waterfall.
The face waterfall is
face waterfall.
I do like
worst.
That we did that as like a wave too, where yeah. it just kind of went down the line. That was nice.
We don't talk about it.
Yeah. Kind of like water falling on your own face.
Yeah, there you go.
Tub girl.
Peter, okay. I have been naked with you in a hot tub before.
It's true.
And that this was weirder.
This was weirder, yeah.
Well, did you waterfall on each other?
No, I made water. I went to the wee-wee room.
That's the best part about hot tubs. It's all ready to like a sterilizing temperature, right?
Yeah, sure. 105, that cleans it.
No bacterial growth at all.
Nick, when you were talking just a minute ago about terrorist versus terrorist for hire, I thought though it was an important distinction that you made, that Caster Troy is terrorist for hire, because he's really just in it for Caster Troy. He's in it for himself. He's in it for the money. He really doesn't care about the good versus evil thing that's happening. You know, like when there's an explanation that's given, but it doesn't have much weight to it. He says, let's release the biblical plague that Hele deserves. So he's got like a little bit of like a misanthropic approach to peak U.S. American civilization, and L.A. is this like beacon of the culture. Like, it's garbage. We need to just get rid of it because look at this trash that exists in L.A. But really, like, how much does he care? You know, it's clear that he's like he's in it for the lifestyle. And again, I found that to be super interesting for the story, locating it in 1997, that the terrorist is not like ideologically driven per se. He's like in it for the glamour. He's in it for the ladies, in it for the parties, in it for like getting into the hot tub, getting naked, like living the fast life. But for some reason, and I think this connects to the fact that this is gets caught in the middle between myth and science fiction, we're never quite told what his motivations are beyond that. It's like just a job for him now. And it felt a little dissatisfying to me not to get a little more backstory. Like, why is he doing, of all the ways he could make money? He's a charismatic person. He could make money a million ways. Why is he doing terrorism?
Yeah. Why not be a politician? Why not be a Sean Archer? You know,
right.
He
becomes Sean Archer. He's like, wait, this is a better hustle. FBI.
My real question is, why get rid of that amazing mustache?
I just thought about that.
I did like the mustache a lot.
Mustache and mustache and milkshakes.
Yeah, scratch everything I just said. Let's go to mustache. Forget all that hoo-ha.
It's unfortunate that they started with mustache and went to non-mustache. Because, I mean, it's a great way of telling passage of time.
Yeah.
But by changing his facial hair?
I mean, it's better than most movies we watch do.
Yeah.
It's not facial hair off. It's just face off.
Yeah.
Also, when he does get to the prison and they do the like introductory prison scene where he's like in the spotlight, just in his like skivvies and just shot from behind, like backlit. I'm like, God, that man's back is muscular. Like,
well,
look
he
at
had
him.
Just filmed Con Air. Yeah. So yeah,
he was ripped.
He was ripped
book.
At that point.
Yeah. Rox, I saw you get something out of your backpack, and I was really hoping it was the novelization of Face Off.
Oh. Nick and I were talking about this earlier.
Oh, no, well, I just ordered the novelization of Con Air.
Oh.
So. Yeah, I'm very psyched for that. It's
well, I was told to bring a favorite quote, so
yes.
to make sure that I had this on
have that
me.
In the pocket.
Some of my favorite things that were said in this film by Nicolas Cage. Let's go, let's go. I'm bored, let's go. relatable. If I were to send you flowers, where would I... Wait, let me rephrase. If I were to let you suck my tongue, would you be grateful? The
what
answer
a great
is
pivot.
Yes.
Let me show like some slight romantic gesture. No. This will work better.
You know, it's
while
surprising
my brother
to me that move of just sticking your tongue out like and leaving it there, waiting for somebody to really nom onto it, hasn't like become more of a like that we don't call that
wildly erotic and appealing.
Right. And have a name for it in the way that like the Spider-Man kiss has become a thing in pop culture, you know?
See, I just assumed that this is when society as a whole just kind of said, you know what? I'll back off on French kissing. This isn't cool. Like we've jumped the shark on tongue to mouth action. And then we started eating ass. So right. It's great. Yeah.
Thanks, millennials.
Sorry, Freeman.
So my favorite line was actually about Casper Troy from the mouth of Eve. And at this point, Nicolas Cage is Sean Archer, and Eve doesn't realize she's speaking to Casper Troy. But what's interesting is at this point in the plot, they're both being kind of dressed down by the women in their life and being told, like, you suck at being in a relationship with me and I really don't like it. But they're hearing it from this other perspective, and both of them kind of responding with a little bit of understanding and compassion, which I think was really well done. One of the better points of writing in the story. But Eve tells Caster that the only three things she's ever heard him say are suck my tongue, nice ass, and see you later.
That is a great line.
Do you guys want to throw any shade at Con Air?
It's boring. Especially, I mean, in comparison to Face Off, it's a boring movie. That's really what I thought when I watched it. Was like, okay, there's actually, you know, there's a fair amount of similar energy, similar plot points even happening between these two movies. Yeah, the fact that that Con Air is a bit more of a coherent movie, I think is not a good thing. I think that it makes it, we're supposed to take it more seriously, or there's more sort of potential for us to do that. Whereas, like I said, with Face Off, you're really pushed to the brink of absurdity and you're either jumping on or not. But I think Con Air was trying to be, well, to put it in your guys' language, Con Air for Nick Cage is it's a tough guy film all the way, 100%. Face Off is a tough guy and a fucking weird film all in one, which, in my opinion, is better.
Yeah, and I didn't watch Con Air, Roxanne did, actually, with your mother, right? Who knows the writer of the film?
She went to high school with the guy that wrote the movie.
So, okay, what I want to say is, I think if we lived in a culture that was more focused on mythology and less on novel, then this film would have received a great portion of critical acclaim that went to LA Confidential. I rewatched LA Confidential and it's good. Don't get me wrong, but it's good because it really nails the form of novel. I don't think there's anything particularly special about it, honestly, as a film, but it's just it's a really good adaptation of a novel. And LA Confidential is based on a book. But Face Off, on the other hand, is this loose adaptation of a few different myths, including Oedipus, apparently. I didn't see it coming, Nick, but thank you for telling me it was coming, because it came. And
oh yes, it did.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, the Blockbuster Movie Award and the MTV Movie Award show that this movie struck a chord with people, and I think it's that chord inside of us that still thinks myths are interesting and worth dealing with and thinking about, even if not everything is explained. It's a little wacky, it's out there, there's plot holes everywhere, it's kind of weird, it's a little freaky, it makes you feel uncomfortable, but actually, it's got a ton of staying power.
Also, Face Off has more boats and Gina Gershon. Con Air lacks these features.
And then I guess the last thing I would want to say in terms of making a really clear case for Face Off is, I mean, it's y'all's show. You know what I mean? You should pick whichever movie you want to watch again. So you have to ask yourselves the questions. Do you really want to watch Con Air for a third time? Do you want to visit that trauma on yourselves? You have to ask yourself that question. Wow. You know what I mean? Or do you want to watch Face Off again? Do you want to watch John Travolta acting like Nicolas Cage?
So this movie, directed by John Woo, and we do have a scene of doves. If you could John Woo another scene in this film, where would you put the doves?
The romantic dinner scene. Candles are lit. She sits down.
Yeah.
Doves.
When Hyde from That 70s Show gets ripped out of the car.
Just doves. He just turns into birds as you pull him out.
Yeah. You just toss birds.
Boat through boat.
Doves. It was a magician's boat.
I'll say the compositing of the boat flip with them flying through the air is the funniest fucking thing.
It's so good. What if the doves carry them to the ground? And that explains how they were safe.
Nice.
Gary? That's nice.
I'll say that I think they really should have made us be more uncomfortable with the sex scenes when they're with the other person's partner. And one of them should have involved the Prince song "When Doves Cry." And there should have been doves at the moment of climax. It should have been a full on, like maybe seen some tits and ass. Like they should have pushed it farther.
Hmm. What if they just replaced Nicolas Cage's dick with a dove's head and neck? He just pulls out a dove head.
How do you know that that's not what he's got?
Yeah, it could be, actually. Yeah.
And that's why the wife didn't question it, because right. that's what yeah. she's used to.
Listen, a dove's head feels the same.
So how would you feel if you were accustomed to just having a bifurcated penis and then like you get this surgery and now you've got dove head dick?
Where did the bifurcation come from? Is it because of claspers?
I don't know. I just think it's funny. It looks like a snake's tongue.
This is an aside from both of the films, but I'm just curious about it since y'all become Cage experts. I always forget that he's a part of the Coppola family.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder, is there an episode where y'all have talked about that and I missed it? Because I want to hear you guys talk about that.
A lot.
I'm putting a request in at some point for y'all to dig in on the dynamics of where he fits in the family, because they seem like Hollywood royalty to me. And I never quite think of him as that, but he is kind of.
I mean, he separated himself so much from it intentionally.
He had two roles that he did as Nicholas Coppola before he switched over. It was Peggy Sue Got Married and...
Well, there was Rumblefish, but there was also his appearance in Fast Times at
Fast Times, that's yeah. what I was thinking. And then I think originally Peggy Sue Got Married, but that later got changed.
Yeah.
Do you know where his screen name comes from?
I don't.
It's from Luke Cage, Power Man, because he loves comic books. So, yep.
Do you think that had he not gone with a screen name and not gone to Nicolas Cage, the Coppola name would have completely changed his career and what roles were offered to him and available to him?
I mean, in terms of nepotism or...
I have this story in my head that Coppola equals art film. And when I think of Cage, I think more like mass appeal.
Yeah, I think changing his name probably gave him more freedom to just act out in the way that he is known to. It separates him pretty thoroughly. I like it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it feels like it gives him somehow more artistic breath. Like there's mm-hmm. some name to uphold. Like, oh, you're a Coppola. Like right. we don't act in those films. Yeah,
sorry, Sofia Coppola doesn't do that, you know. Oh, okay. All right, fine.
What? Act? You're right.
Well, that is true. Sorry, Sofia.
You're so weird.
Great director, just not
teenagers are weird. That's what it was.
Agreed. Good director.
Good director, not a good actor.
Yeah. Last thoughts on this movie.
Fourth time watching it, like, had so much fun. Every time I return to this movie, I find something else.
If there was a character from this movie that you had to invite to a dinner party with, say, a weirdly religious family member, like you just have to do it, which character would you bring to dinner with your weirdly religious aunt, your cult aunt?
That's such a good question, because I have so many of those. And
Midwest, baby.
You got it. The answer is the henchmen, when they're in the like slick layer, caster choice slick layer, before the shootout with the FBI.
Yeah, tight layer.
Yeah, it's a really tight layer. I want to hang there. And
it was on MTV Cribs.
That's why they won the award.
Yeah. Well, maybe that award isn't such a big deal after all. You know, what a homer play. But Caster Troy, but this is John Archer speaking as Caster Troy in this moment, says, I want to take his face off. And the bald dude who makes out with his sister isn't, you know, because he's an idiot.
Yeah, Nick Cassavetes.
Yeah, because he makes out with his sister. He makes poor choices. He's immediately on board. He's like, cool, we're going to do that. It's going to be a party. But then there's that guy in the background who there's like a pregnant pause and he goes, how are we going to do that? he's not afraid to ask Caster Troy the question that could get him shot in the head.
Right.
And I need someone to ask my messed up aunts the question that nobody else in the room has the balls to ask. Mm.
Good answer.
I'd invite Thomas Jane from this movie because I want to touch his hair.
Okay.
I'm going Gina Gershon. Okay. Just because she's so hot. Right,
because they're all the same, but Gina Gershon. She different.
She yeah, different.
That's true.
And it would just be a nice distraction. Plus, I've seen what she can do in Bound. You guys watch Bound? Yeah.
I would have to bring Dubov.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. Dinner with the Machine. Nice. Yeah,
pre or post lobotomy, Dubov?
Me. did lobotomy. Yeah, pretty.
He's got vomit.
I've just constantly got somebody being electrocuted at the dinner table. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah.
That's a great way to get one over on your messed up aunt is to make her sit next to a mid lobotomy Dubov with vomit on his mouth.
Yeah.
Also, Dubov is the homie. All that Caster Troy has to say is, right. "Hey, I didn't touch your wife, man." He immediately believes him. You know?
Nice.
Yeah. He's like, "All right, I take you for your word." We all need a person like that in our lives.
He was now in a state of stupid. he'd been stupided pretty good. Okay.
All right.
Face waterfalls, dinner parties, and mom complexes.
That's what you come here for.
Yeah. Face off seems to has it all.
Yeah.
And dove dicks.
One more abacus bead slides across.
Ding, done.
See you guys at the sequel.
Well, thank you all for being here.
Thank
again.
You guys.
Yeah, what a treat.
Mm-hmm. All right, compelling arguments from both sides.
Yeah, thanks to all of our guests this week.
Yeah, it was really nice to see Shay and both Gary and Rock. So yeah, powerhouse couple of guests just bringing it all back for round three.
Round three.
So the 16. So now Nick and I are going to discuss the arguments and...
Yeah, I guess we're going to just think back to like what we've heard today and put aside our biases.
Yeah,
that's going to be hard because I'm
biased as hell.
Very much so. Like, I'm not here to change.
We know.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's start with Shay. So Shay's arguments were we've got a fun kind of action campy romp that is able to be jumped into at any moment. Enjoy.
Yeah. Like you're there for the journey. You're not there for the individual pieces or necessarily even the individual actors. It's all just a
right. Because we've got a large ensemble in this one, much more than you have in Face Off.
Yeah.
And so it's just about being taken for that just sort of a summertime, summer feeling, summer love.
Summer blockbuster.
Mm-hmm. And then we've got Gary and Rox vying for Face Off. With an argument of...
Which went pretty deep. Deeper than I would expect for this film, but...
That's why we have
Gary and Rox. And, you know, it's we learned how that it's edible.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And
I feel weird, like, if I were to vote against it, am I voting against mother loving?
We'll find out.
There are some things I just don't know if I can put on, like, the internet... as being against yet.
Mm-hmm.
So
fair. I mean, for numbers alone,
bifurcated penises, mother loving.
Uh-huh. You know. Uh-huh.
But no, I think they made a really strong case for this being a much better character genre piece and just a really good front to back story.
Right. Yeah.
That's also how you have to eat a peach.
Front to back
for hours.
And you know, it doesn't feel like, we have fatigue from watching Face Off. I know we've talked about the length of the movie.
It is the longer of the two. It's 220 as opposed to like 155 for mm-hmm. Con Air. I know for me, the performances of Face Off really are what sells it for me, especially when you look at Nick Cage in both films. This Face Off really hinges on Nick Cage's over-the-top personality and his wild emotional swings, which work really well for the character, whereas Cameron Poe is just a stoic...
He's a steadfast justice machine.
Steadfast justice machine with a very swingy accent. But that role could really be played by any wall of muscle for the most part. Like, I don't think Nicolas Cage doesn't bring any gravitas to that role other than just being huge.
That might be fair, but he also, Nicolas Cage, the actor, adds charisma that I don't think any wall of muscle can necessarily pick up. The shots of Nicolas Cage, like, winking back over his shoulder, the manly husband, father.
I'm going to say it. This is the sexiest Nick Cage.
It's up there. I think Birdie is still my sexiest Nick Cage.
With the teeth removed?
No. Wait, was it Birdie or...
You're thinking of Racing with the Moon. Yeah.
I don't know. Come Gutter's Cage.
Yeah. Racing with the Moon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely that one.
Plus, he does that dance move on the bowling alley.
Yeah. And it's got Crispin Glover in it.
Oh, yeah.
That adds to Nicolas Cage's sexiness. So, but no, like, this is a very, very attractive, mature Nicolas Cage. This is his prime. So both movies, he's in his prime.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same year. Like, these were filmed within 2 years of each other.
But he's got that hair.
These are juggernaut movies for him, too. I mean, these are two of his biggest movies.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's fair. We haven't discussed. These are two-thirds of the
they're really big action films.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a tough call.
It is. I know in terms of just when I sit down to watch Con Air, any scene I watch, I'm going to enjoy. I don't know that I enjoy it front to back. Like, I just zone in. I just zone in and out of that film just because there's nothing really drawing me in. Whereas Face Off, I really like the whole thing. Even like my critiques of like the weird prison scene, it's still interesting. And the performances across the board are all great.
Yeah, there are difficulties in a movie that is primarily viewed in a singular like backdrop.
Yeah.
Like, plane is most of it.
Yeah. And I
or
mean,
it
not
feels
even,
like it is.
Yeah, it does. But not even that. I mean, we discussed in the first one, like, this movie was being rewritten a lot. That movie was being rewritten a lot. So
yeah.
There's a lot of sloppiness there that ultimately does come together better than it should. But I consider that's much more of a turn off your brain popcorn film as opposed to like a good character film, which, if nothing else, Nick Cage is a character.
Yeah. It's a fantastic product. Is it the better of the two?
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah. I think the package is best in Con Air. And I think it's the most accessible for an audience. You know, you'll never get me to badmouth a boat chase. And Face Off has one of the top boat chases in my life. But I think Con Air has the people's heart.
Let's throw it to the people.
No.
Yeah, first episode. It comes down to Peter.
Fuck.
Because
you're voting for Face Off?
I was voting for Face Off.
Oh, that was unclear.
Oh, I thought it was very clear. Sorry about that. I went for the one that actually had acting in it.
So you actually said something, though, Sean, that maybe has made me flip-flop. Because Gary and Rox sold me pretty well. But you also talked about how you can jump into Con Air at any point and kind of just be fine. And Face Off, you're like, the fuck? What is this thing? Ah, man. One of these is a better movie. One of these is more enjoyable to watch repeatedly. Both of them are overblown. Both of them have about 20 minutes too long. Con Air.
Cool. I love Con Air.
Yeah. Well, thank you to everybody who got us to this point.
We already have that recorded. You don't need to do it again.
Yeah, but I'm going to. I bought the fucking gavel.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. This is a new kind of experiment for us. So hopefully you enjoyed it. And if you want to talk with us on social media and tell us that we're stupid, you can find us at @cage_match_pod. Specifically that I am stupid.
Yeah, you're stupid. not you, Peter, but whoever said we're stupid, you're stupid.
Yeah.
Good. Jerk.
Wait, nice.
If you'd like to see photos of all of us in tight denim with dirty white tank tops on. And maybe some mullets.
Oh, you can go to our
Patreon. Yeah.
Special thanks to our Sparkle Buddies, Josh, Sean, Josie, Rico, Matt, Adam, and Bill. And to our Cage Dancers, Ira, John, Freeman, Lance, Nathan, and Cameron. Really love your support. Cameron Poe. Yes, it's him. That's why I voted. Sorry, it's biased.
It's fixed. It's all fixed.
And as always,
2/3 of the hosts are.
Hey! All right, have a happy face waterfall, everybody.
Bye bye.
Oh, I don't like it.
5/5.
So I was in a tattoo shop recently getting a tattoo done, and a woman came in and said to a visiting artist at the shop, "I want to get a tattoo of a weasel with a shrimp dick on the bottom of my foot as a portrait of my ex so I can stomp his likeness out over the next couple of years." And so I was So she walks out and the tattoo artist draws it up while she goes down the road for a beverage. She comes back in and he shows the drawing that he drew up, and he had the shrimp shoved into the crotch of the weasel backwards. So it was the ass of the shrimp.
Just the shrimp tail?
Shrimp tail. Shrimp tail dick, which was bifurcated actually.
Oh, perfect. Oh, yeah, yeah, true. That is.
And she got the tat done. So she's out there. So if you're listening to this, hit us up and you know, we want to make contact.
You know, good on that tattoo artist too for being like, This sounds like something you're going to regret at some point, but let's just go for it.
Yeah. We're doing
full send. Put it on the foot.
And you got one as well because you were so inspired?
I did. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
On your face, though, which is really impressive.
I didn't want to ask. Yeah.